Coffee, yes, go ahead.
Coffee doesn't do for me what it's supposed to.
It doesn't.
No, it doesn't. Doesn't wake me up or give me energy. The irony. In fact, if I drink too much,
yeah,
it will make me sleepy.
Wow.
I don't know why. And I'm not the only one. I've heard other people
sure
share that as well. But I drink it because I like it.
Okay.
Not because it gives me that morning
pick
boost.
Me up.
Yeah.
Okay.
That may change as I get older. I don't know. But
I hear you.
Right now. So, I actually drink half calf.
Okay.
And I considered switching to decaf completely because I don't care about the caffeine, except they don't make caffeine coffee as good. It's just not. Because the process.
Caffeine or decaffeinated coffee is good.
Decaf, excuse me.
Okay, okay. Yeah, no sweat. Yeah.
And the reason.
Yeah.
That I understand it to be, I haven't looked in the process that much, but is they basically suck all the juices out of the beans.
Sure.
Remove the caffeine somehow, some chemical process, and then try and shove the flavor back in. And, you know.
It just doesn't.
I don't think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't
if
work.
If you were to suck all the blood out of me, suck me dry, and then.
Put it back in, and it'd be a little different.
I think I'd probably be a little different. I don't think I'd taste the same.
Yeah. Welcome to How I See It with me, Mark Pratt, and
Justin Sternberg. This is a podcast that works to counter cultural polarization through thoughtful conversations.
No, I personally, of course, am not a coffee person.
Yeah.
I'm naturally caffeinated. I would refer to myself.
Naturally caffeinated. Yeah.
But I've heard that from others.
So you haven't had your blood sucked out and the
no,
caffeine
not in a caffeine, removed. Not in a caffeine sense, yes.
Right, so you are caffeinated.
I am caffeinated. I'm naturally caffeinated.
All right, fair enough.
But as far as that goes, as you were... thinking about that, what tends to come to mind when you think about not being fully energized or the ability to be energized?
Yeah. Well, you know, when I'm sleepy.
Yeah.
I think about when's the next moment today I'll be able to rest. Or maybe grab a cat nap or something like that. Is there an opportunity to catch up? Because you kind of have that longing feeling of needing rest, of needing to sleep or whatever. And that's a nice little segue, Mark, because today our goal is to talk a little bit about the value of rest, right?
Sure.
And what rest can look like. I don't know. Who knows where we'll go? We'll do what we do. We'll meander around the topic of rest,
And as I was thinking about, as we talked about, you know, rest, and I do, I think our desire is to address topics that tend to be polarizing. And I think in some ways, as I think about rest, that can be one of those things that tends to be a polarizing topic. Because you follow me? Because I think as we talk about rest and sleep or what rest is, I think and possibly even myself, this is why I'm talking about it, I guess, that might equate rest with laziness.
Right.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say in my industry, I guess, the tech world, there's a hustle culture. It's called the hustle culture.
Okay.
Not just tech, but like in creator world, like YouTubers. It's this idea that if you want to rise to the top, you got to hustle, you know, all day, all night. And in the tech world, it's, you know, it's like whoever works the hardest is going to, the meritocracy idea, right? Like whoever works hardest and proves their worth gets to the top.
Gotcha.
And then you think about America and just in general, how we're kind of like that. I think as opposed to a country like, what is it, Spain, siestas, that, mm-hmm. I guess it's maybe Mexico.
Mexico, yeah, yeah, yeah. I hear you.
But I think France, maybe.
Spain does too.
I recall there being a country where, mm-hmm. they're very relaxed about, like, lunchtime, for instance.
Sure. There's an actual shutdown of the day that everybody plans on in the middle of the day, and then that makes time for more partying at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But seriously, you're able to have that time, the siesta, to be able to rest.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So what are your personal thoughts on rest or even your ability to do it in contrast to the hustle?
Yeah. So I think for me, I probably tend towards hustle. It's probably, like, if you were to look at a scale of hustle versus rest.
Sure.
The scale probably tips towards hustle. Yeah. And to the point where it needs to be more balanced, right? The scale should be a little more balanced, because I will, and I think maybe this is slowly changing as I get older, just an understanding of, like, there's no reason or need to, like, continually prove myself. And I think it ties into other character traits of, like, needing approval or needing to prove my worth or whatever. And so it's always, you always have to be on, right? And I think as
you
do? No. Oh. But that's how it's how I feel. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that naturally as I get older, I naturally care less about what people think, less about proving my worth. I've established enough stuff behind me, right? Like, there's enough under my belt, so to speak, to say.
Credibility?
Yeah, credibility, yeah. Worth that I've gained. Self-worth, I guess.
Okay.
It's just like, and so the need to go is lessened, and I'm able to recognize the importance of rest. And also, family is a very important, like, dynamic to me right now. And to me, that often represents rest in a good way.
Sure.
And not always, of course, especially when the kids were younger and babies. And
yeah.
I think sometimes I would go to work just so I could get some rest.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, well, what are your thoughts?
Here again, it's interesting as you were sharing to think back and look back at how my views of rest have changed. And one of my early memories, I can remember being at my grandparents' house, you know, in the middle of the day, having lunch. And at that point, probably my grandfather would have been 70 years old, give or take. He, you know, lived to 99. And I can still remember, because my grandfather was noted in the area for his work ethic.
Mm-hmm.
He was noted, you know, as a hard man, you know, full German, you know, he would have been approximately 6 feet tall, give or take, but probably, you know, 170 pounds, just, you know, tall and lanky,
this was in Pennsylvania?
This is in Pennsylvania. Okay. Yeah.
It wasn't like, he wasn't Amish or anything like
that.
But kind of that similar work ethic idea.
Very similar work ethic, even more so. It was just, the work ethic that he had, and even my grandmother, she was his partner in the process, of course. And I would say, you know, my grandfather was probably more recognizable, but from my perspective, my grandmother worked equally hard, you know, on the farm. And I can still remember, you know, after lunch, my grandfather would lay on a daybed in their kitchen, and he would take like a 15-20 minute nap every day. And so when you were talking about rest, that's kind of what came to my mind. It's like, right up till my grandfather died, he was a farmer. I mean, he kind of had a heart issue, became pneumonia, and he passed away. Like,
wow.
You know, I happened to be in the hospital actually the day he passed away. Mm-hmm. He was there. He had, you know, kind of spoken over John, our son, you know, and he was gone. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, probably 2 weeks before that, he had been milking cows right up till that time, you know? So as I was thinking about that, and it's like, as a kid sitting in his kitchen, wondering what I'm going to do for the next 15, 20 minutes while I have to be quiet so I don't wake up, you know, my grandfather or my grandmother. My grandmother went to the other room to nap. And so I thought about that in the context of how beneficial that rest may have been in that longevity process. Cause there's no doubt my grandparents were up early in the morning. You know, they weren't necessarily late to bed people, you know, but yet I just thought about that as you were sharing, from that context of early on, and how I currently look or value rest in that process, how that affects how I see it. Is there a benefit to that nap in the middle of the day where longevity is concerned? Is there, you know, the siesta? And yet in our American culture, it's like, no, burn the candle both ends all the time, fast as you can.
Yeah.
And the older I get, the more I say, no, I'm not sure that's the most beneficial way.
Right.
And I think, you know, because this, truth be told, you know, there's moments when I shift from the construction world to the therapy world where I know I've gotten up early to do the construction thing. And now I'm transitioning to my evening. I'll plan on getting to my office, you know, the church, at, you know, a half hour ahead of time. And I'll take a 15, 20 minute nap, you know, just so that I'm recharge to be able to kind of do therapy the rest of the day.
Yeah.
And so it's funny that I find myself valuing the nap, you know, again, just like to be able to get the rest.
Mm. Yeah. And it's funny how, it's not funny, it's almost a little sad that we're almost embarrassed to admit taking naps.
Oh, yeah. I guess in some ways I'm far less embarrassed.
Sure.
And I think in some ways, you know, I'll get ribbed, or, you know, it's like, you going back there to take a nap? It's like, yep, got 15 minutes. I, you know, set my little timer.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, then I'm ready to take on, you know.
It's fascinating because, again, our culture doesn't value that kind of rest, but sometimes that is the most productive thing we can do for the next 20 minutes.
True.
Right? Because it's essentially recharging your battery so that you can give the next things your full energy instead of your half-depleted battery, you know?
Yes.
And rest can come in so many forms.
Sure.
Right? So,
yeah.
So what we're talking about is kind of this daily renewal.
Yep.
Napping, right? And I think that's, there's a lot of value. It doesn't, of course, have to be daily, but just this idea that
when the opportunity comes, or I'm actually, and I think that part, as we're describing the napping, also kind of ties in with the ability to have margin in my day.
Yeah.
To the point that I'm not, my timeline or my Chronos day isn't just 15 minutes, you know, minute segments. It's like my digital watch. You know, I'm so mindful of what the time is, and I lose track of what's before and after sometimes. And I think, you know, if we're mindful of what's to come, we need to be mindful of, okay, the energy that I have to get there. Mm-hmm. But I think in the busyness, we can be so caught up. It's 10:10, it's 10:11, it's 10. And it's always this frantic, what I have to get done, before it gets to 10:30. I have 15 minutes to get this done. I have 10 minutes to get this done. And I think that's where I'm at, is this ability to we have to be mindful of what is necessary and create margin around it. And I think you bring up, when you bring up family, you know, I think that's an important part there. Because it's not just a nap, it's the ability to set time aside to recharge. And I think we can do that. We can do that in the sense of making time for vacation and so forth. But how often have we, you know, does the joke go around? It's like, I got to go back to work to rest up from vacation. You know, and I'm not, that's not a judgmental statement, but it's just an interesting perspective.
Sometimes we vacation like we work.
Yes.
Where it's like, we fill it up with an agenda and I will say some of my favorite vacations in the last few have been in the last few years, where we have gone to meet with my sister and her husband, who is my best friend. He was my best man when I got married, and I was his best man.
Oh wow!
They got married, yeah, so we go back way back, and then they have five daughters. And the last couple vacations, we booked a cabin in the mountains, and we basically said, especially the first time. The first time we did this, we said, I don't know about you, but we just need to recharge. Like, we don't want a big agenda. We like the idea of just sitting around, talking with you guys, watching the kids, lighting fires, you know, like, agenda-free, relaxed, maybe even teetering on boredom, and especially the kids. Like, let them be bored. You know, let them figure it out. Let them, you know.
Oh, nice.
And that was one of my favorite vacations I can remember.
Wow.
Because it was such a recharging, and man. And I think we took one trip out of that cabin to go to a hiking trail or whatever. And that was really fun, but it was, like you said, there was so much margin around it. It didn't ruin the vibe or whatever.
Yeah.
I would say it enhanced it, because when we got done, I was like, all right, now we can go back and relax again.
Yeah.
That was just really great. And I think there's so much... I mean, it's kind of obvious to say, but there's so much value in rest. And I guess what I was getting at earlier is that I think there's different kinds of rest, right? Like, there's kind of that daily renewal or semi-daily rest that can happen. And even nightly, right? We rest. And
sure.
Maybe some do it better than others. You know, get their... Yeah. But there's also periodic rest in terms of vacation. Mm-hmm. And then there's seasonal rest. And this is an interesting dynamic that I'm starting to learn and appreciate, because I've never been a fan of winter, you know, and this is something, you know, you and I have talked about in terms of seasonal depression is a thing for me. And so, like, I see the days getting shorter, I see the leaves falling, and it's just very triggering for me. And it's not like I think about all that on a daily basis, it's just something about it triggers my psyche to be like, oh, fun is ending, you know, the good stuff's ending, all the life is dying, you know. I think it's very tied to the seasonal changes. And the last, I want to say this last winter is the first time I've tried to do this, to reframe it.
Wow.
And I actually was doing counseling with an online counselor last year, which is kind of cool, through BetterHealth. This is not an ad.
Yeah, yeah.
You'll hear about BetterHealth on other podcasts. They're getting paid to say this, and I am not. It was cool to be able to have that. But one of the things we talked about was this idea of seasonal depression. And one of the things he mentioned was how those seasons are necessary. And I think that was the first time that I'd ever gone, oh, yeah, like, I have to have winter, you know? Like, we have to hibernate. We have to... And so I started to try to look for, what is it about winter that's important in my life? And I think one of those things that I established this year, working through that process, was rest.
Sure.
Like, it's a season of rest. The nights, the days are shorter. You're not going as much. You're sitting, and one of the things Megan jokes about, as we talk about, because we've talked about this, is that it's time to play Fortnite.
Okay.
And so this last winter, me and my daughters, and Joseph a little bit, but it's not quite his thing yet. I have a feeling he'll get into it more than the girls eventually, but we would sit and we would play Fortnite all day Saturday.
Like, oh, wow.
We would just hang out and play Fortnite. Those were such good times. I mean, it was like, that's why when I was talking about rest earlier, I was talking about family. There's something about being able to just be present without the need to be going somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Like, with that time frame in your mind.
Yeah.
Both for me and my kids, because my oldest daughter, she is arguably more time conscious than I am. Like, she's very, very responsible, and she's very good about keeping track of things and time and all that. Mm-hmm. So just recognizing, like, even the value of seasonal rest.
Sure.
And how when things are dying, it means more rest. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, yeah.
Being able to translate that stuff into the same value of rest. I don't know. What do you think?
No, that? I hadn't really thought about it from that perspective. Mm-hmm. I know, you know, yeah, very much aware of the seasonal disorder. And as you were sharing on that, you know, you grew up in Minnesota, you know, that comes to mind, yeah. You know, it's like, yeah. It's
almost Alaska. No.
I should have said Minnesota.
Minnesota.
But, yeah. But I was thinking about how that ties into what winter is, you know, as how you see it. And what kind of reminded me is I can admit, in North Carolina, I miss some of the seasons, you know, that we had, that I had growing up in Pennsylvania with the snow, the leaves, you know. I mean, granted, there's some of that here, but it's a much milder, there's the extremes aren't there, if you will. You know, the extreme cold, granted, there's more heat here, but I was just thinking about, you know, how sometimes in our lives we can move towards this dynamic that seems more productive, you know, like from, and I was thinking about it from a seasonal dynamic to moving down here. It's like, I didn't have those seasonal, you know, you didn't have to worry about the frost coming. You don't have to worry about frost here. You don't have to build for it. You don't have to, you know, store up for it, you know, because in our culture, everything's pretty much right here, especially everything's pretty much available year round, mm-hmm. especially, you know, with the food industry, you know, mm-hmm. you can get spinach all year round, mm-hmm. you know, or whatever, bananas, you know, that kind mm-hmm. of thing. But I was thinking about how when things become more accessible, or, you know, when the days are longer, like you were saying, we just tend to fill that with more and more, to where now if it rains, it really stinks because I can't do all the things that I had planned on doing. But yet there's something to be said for rainy days and being able to play Fortnite and, you know, other things like that. Sit down, read a book, or, you know, mm-hmm. do something different. I was just thinking about that, and I appreciate that mindfulness of, you know, what do the seasons offer, those shorter days and that kind of thing. And that ability to rest is one of those.
Yeah, when you mentioned rainy days, you made me, I kind of had a flashback to when I used to paint houses with with people that, you know, friends from family, friends from church, whatever, we part of their business. And just remembering those days when called for rain and we couldn't go to work.
Yeah.
And just that, like, oh shucks, you know, like we have to stay home today. And it was bittersweet because we didn't get paid, you know, hourly work, right? So, but just the, like, forced rest. I just, man, I love those days. And I, you know, in that job, it felt like we were always on the go, always on the move, always behind, always catching up, always trying to get ahead. Like, it was kind of, I think I felt more rushed in that work than I do even in the tech world, which is kind of, like, known for that. It just always felt like we had to go. And I don't know if that probably had tied into some of my need to get approval and, like, prove myself combined with what was kind of conveyed, but so those moments where you're forced to sit, which again, you're kind of like, if you're aware of the business, you recognize like, oh man, now we're getting further behind or whatever. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there's nothing you can do about the rain. Like, it's here, you know?
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's just interesting to think about that forced rest sometimes.
Sure.
Yeah. Because I imagine you've experienced that too, where you've had, like you said, you had this full day, full week, full whatever, and then the rain came, and guess what?
Just this week.
Yeah.
Just this week. I mean, it rained all day Monday.
Yeah.
You know, and I had
It was supposed to be just a couple hours, right?
Exactly. Like in the morning. Yeah. Yeah. But it was still a good day, you know, and I think that's part of that difference. Granted, I was able to, you know, catch up on some stuff inside and continuing ed credits, that kind of thing. So it wasn't like it was a lost day, you know, in the sense of, you know, non-productive.
Yeah.
But yet it was a different sense. I was able to, you know, do some stuff that I wouldn't have been able to do, you know, otherwise. And I think there's value in that.
Mm-hmm. And even that term, lost day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If we're resting, is it, you know what I mean? Like if we, like, I know this isn't who you are, but if you were to say, well, it's raining, so I'm going to sit around, maybe read some books.
Right.
Maybe, you know, I don't know. Like, what would Mark do with a free day of not, you know, but we consider it a lost day.
Yeah. And I recognize it wasn't, and I, you know, tend to, but if I'm being honest, I wrestle with what I'm going to do. I wrestle with that non-productivity.
Yes.
You know, and it does seem counter to, you know, getting stuff done, making stuff happen. And I think, you know, that's the other side of that coin as we describe it. You know, it's like, what is it about rest that makes it seem like I'm not doing something?
Like loss.
Yeah, and where does that come from, that idea that, well, I just have to be doing something all the time? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that's probably different, or I know it's different for different people. Some people may not feel that at all, but I'm sure there are others who do feel that tremendously. And it's like they, like us, if I may say so, they probably struggle with that ability to set time aside for rest.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny as we think about it, you know, even God had, you know, recognized that he needed, not that he needs, of course, but, you know, he took that day to rest after creation. We know that.
And then in order, you know, he set the pattern and then mandated it through the Sabbath, right?
Sure.
To the point where he said, I know you guys aren't going to do this unless I say this day's holy, and you're in big trouble if you don't do it. Because there's two sides to that. Number one, we need rest, and he that's how he designed it. Mm-hmm. And number two, we don't want to rest.
Yeah.
You know, obviously it doesn't go for everyone, but I think generally our bent is towards, like you said, not losing the day.
Right. And I think there's something to be said, too, for that dynamic that says, you know, cultures, you know, or even businesses that actually build rest into the schedule actually end up being, you know, the days become more productive for individuals who have rest built into their schedule than people who are working 7 days a week, you know, that kind of thing, and never have that built-in rest. Because I do think, you know, our minds get tired, our bodies get tired, and we just lose productivity.
Yeah.
Without rest. I think we're designed to have rest. And I think part of that comes from our technological world, maybe, that tends to drive us, you know, versus our forefathers. Well, I think of all electricity and how electricity changed our world.
Yeah.
You know, we have artificial light to be able to, you know, it's not it's not every day, or well, you can go into most any city and you can find a construction site because it's all just lit up. And so there's, you know, generators and so forth to be able to create light to work around the clock if we need to. And yet, you know, I recognize that's a shift dynamic and not all those people are working around the same people are working around the clock. But I just think about it from that perspective and saying, okay, how much harder is it, you know, to find rest as we become more advanced to a certain degree?
Yeah, because I think we're always optimizing for productivity, right?
Sure.
In every way, in technology, you know.
Right.
Apps on your phone, you know, like, everything. I mean, that's one of the biggest sells you can put on any product is makes you more productive, right?
Yes.
In one way or another, you know, increases productivity. Books will help you increase your productivity. You know, we're always optimizing for that. Mm. And even, you know, you mentioned our forefathers or whatever, but even I think of daylight savings time was specifically created and implemented to optimize for productivity.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So that we had more daylight time to work in the course of a day. And we're always, I think, optimizing for that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I came across this quote I wanted to share.
Yeah.
It's from a poet, Mary Sarton, on the importance of rest. She said, "I always forget how important the empty days are. How important it may be sometimes not to expect to produce anything, even a few lines in a journal. A day when one has not pushed oneself to the limit seems a damaging day, a sinful day. Not so. The most valuable thing one can do for the psyche occasionally is to let it rest, wander, live in the changing light of a room." And I just thought that last phrase was so, you know, evokes a certain feeling of,
sure.
I think what you're just like almost boredom, but to and you know, you were talking about different words for time. Chronos, you mentioned earlier, but
sure.
Also Kairos, I think.
Kairos.
Where it's more
living in
moment.
The moment.
Yeah. Moment, yes. in the moment. Right. And I think about that changing light of the room and seeing the little dust particles in the sun.
Sure.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And just being able to witness that single moment. And
being able to sit in that moment long enough to see it transition into another moment.
Changing light. Yeah.
Yes. That's what came to mind. It takes time.
Yeah.
I'm able to sit long enough to where I see the difference in the sun coming through the window horizontally.
Right.
And I watch it shift as the sun rises.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the room takes on different nuances in that amount of time. And even just sitting, I'm able to see things differently.
Yeah.
If I'm not in that push, rush. And there is I really appreciate that, you know, the rest and the wandering. You know, allowing there is something to be said for allowing my mind to wander even, and the rest that creates. And I think we do have to slow down. And I think the wandering of our minds can be, you know, not just recharging, but creating a vision. You know, a dreaming, if you will, that's recognizes that my life is bigger than just the Chronos time. But there are these moments.
Built of moments.
Yes.
Yeah.
And when I'm in that moment, I actually lose track of time in a positive way.
Yeah.
And I don't think we always build enough of that in.
Yeah. And it's in those moments as well that we can quote unquote time travel, partly because we can slow down time, right? Because I think when you're sitting in the changing of the light of the room, it feels like time just crawled to a stop. You know, I think it's something so that's a unique experience. And it's interesting because this just happened. the other day. Where were... Oh! Megan and I took a trip. So a weekend trip together. And sure. We went to Myrtle Beach. We were there kind of Saturday afternoon. Stayed there overnight. And then we're there all day Sunday. Stayed there overnight. And then the next day drove. We actually drove to Raleigh and went to a different event, a concert. It was just a fun long weekend, and it was like both of us were like, this day is so long. Like, what do we do with this whole, like, we were both just so almost shocked that we were like, what should we do now? Yeah. And we're like, well, we went to the mall and we bought too much stuff, so we probably shouldn't keep doing this for another day or whatever. We ate, we're full, it's not like we're ready for the next meal. So then we're like, well, let's go to a movie. So we went to a movie, and then that got done. It's like, well, I'm not quite hungry. Now what do we do? And it was just this unique experience of, wow, yeah, I forgot what this feels like, you know? And I don't know, I guess it made me think of that when I was thinking about how time seemed to crawl to like a near, almost like it felt like it stopped. And I think there was just, I wouldn't say we were bored. I think it was more just like, this is interesting and restful. And I don't know. I think if I were to do another day, I'd be like crawling in my skin, like, let's do something. Like, let's go back home. Let's whatever. But it was good. And speaking of time travel, you know, I was thinking about this too. In those moments of rest, downtime is when we're able to dream.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And that happens, like, physically, literally, when we rest.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, real dreams. But yep. Also happens figuratively in terms of our rest and rest time. And that's when we're able to stop for a minute and look, time travel to the future. And we, you know, like we talked about in our mission statement one, about how beginning with the end in mind.
Yeah.
In order to do that, you have to stop being where you are and go way down there to where you want to be and figure out, take a look around.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Time travel.
Exactly.
And think about, okay, if I want my life to look like this, how do I get there? And kind of reverse engineering that process. And that's what beginning with the end in mind is. But the idea is that you don't get there without taking some time that isn't quote unquote productive.
Yeah.
Right? Because when your mind's occupied with the current task, you're not able to think those thoughts.
Correct.
And Stephen Covey described it as a habit, or a quadrant two activity. So quadrant one is the important and urgent. It's the things that are, you know, you have to act on right now that are important. It's your job. It's the next task on your to-do list. Maybe, right? You might.
Sure.
But quadrant two is important, but not urgent.
Sure.
And often it's, we don't give enough time to allow quadrant two activities to happen. And I think that's, rest is a big part of that.
No doubt.
Now, obviously, if you're always doing quadrant two during your rest time, I don't think you're doing rest right either, but there is something to that, right?
Yeah.
And
I think the phrase, the tyranny of the urgent, you know, I think that's where we get caught up in that quadrant. We can spend a lot of time in quadrant one.
Yes.
Just because there can be or are so many things that seem as if they're urgent.
So that's three. Quadrant three is
okay.
Urgent, but not important.
There you go.
And so what happens, right, is we spend so much time in one and three.
Yes.
Everything that's
the combination
urgent,
of the two. Sure.
Right. That we burn out and we dip into quadrant four, which is not important, not urgent. So then it's like, I need to refill. I'm going to just go watch movies all day long. Binge
stream
on Netflix, right? It's
Fortnite.
Yeah. Just
Facebook.
Facebook, like the endless scrolling,
the
right?
The scrolling.
It's like, it's not important. It's not urgent, but your brain just needs a break.
Yeah.
And this is what you're doing to quote unquote, give it a break. And it's this, like you said, the tyranny of the urgent, because you're in quadrant one and three.
Sure.
Most of your time. And go ahead.
So, and this is for everybody listening, or for me, even myself, you know, to the point, There's four quadrants then that yes, you're talking about. Yeah. It's like a window pane, yep, if you will, divided into four sections. And one has to do with the urgent and necessary.
Urgent and important.
Urgent and important. Okay. And three.
So that would be like, you have to take your kid to the hospital.
The things that only right, you can do.
Right. And it needs to happen now.
Gotcha.
And it needs to happen. Like, it is the thing you should do right now.
Sure.
You should never stop doing quadrant one.
Like, I gotcha. No, yeah, that's and that's where I'm working through is this, yeah, this balance, because I'm hearing that four isn't necessarily as advantageous, but it's a default, if you will.
Yeah.
From spending too much time in one, where it is important, it's urgent and it's important, and three, it's urgent but not important.
Right. And so, often we conflate importance, urgency with importance.
Exactly.
Right.
That's where the tyranny of that comes, yes, from. It's like, it's all important.
Right.
Everything's important.
Right.
And so therefore, we don't pull back because I have too much important stuff to do. Mm-hmm. And we spend very little time in quadrant two.
Right.
Which was, define that for me again.
So quadrant two is important, but not urgent.
Gotcha.
And the irony is, the less time you spend in quadrant two, the more quadrant one and three take over.
Sure.
Quadrant two allows you to build in the margin that you need. It allows you to determine what is important. So then quadrant three becomes less, you know, less, it takes up less space because you recognize what is actually important in life.
It's a prioritizing.
It's a prioritizing, yeah.
Sure.
Yep. And it builds in margin and it builds it. And what I think what he would argue is that we spend less time in quadrants three and four.
Okay.
And instead spend that time in two. So going back to what you're, quadrant two being not urgent, but okay, important. And that's
sure,
where quadrant two activities happen, like planning, like dreaming, like yes, organizing,
So ideally, we want to find a sort of balance, if you would, between one and two. Those,
yeah,
those
would be the ideal, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, he wouldn't say leisure is not.
No, no.
Whatever. But if you properly plan for, you know, if you have,
yeah,
If you're not reactively quadrant four, like scrolling.
Right, it's not a default because right, I've just completely burnt out and this is all I want to do. It's not to say that I can't spend time scrolling Facebook, but yeah, even then, I'm still mindful of how much time I've already spent here.
Right.
I'm here for a moment to see what my friends and family are doing, but then I'm able to move on because it's not that my mind just needs that rest, right, and I'm using that as a default.
It's a combination of your mind needing rest and your mind's inability to say no. So other things happen in quadrant four too that are less, you know, innocent.
Right? Gotcha.
Because that's where we fall back. That's where we can fall into bad habits or even create bad habits because it's in that place where your mind just can't, it doesn't have its agency.
Sure.
If you will, right?
It's that point where I can't handle it or I can't do this anymore. So I may fall into a habit or a hang up of sorts, and that can become a pattern.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear where you're coming from for that. Because I just don't necessarily find myself having the energy to fight off or make a positive decision, a healthy decision. Right. And I'm just kind of going to my default mechanisms.
Right. And then sometimes we slip backwards into a habit where it's like, you know, like let's use drinking, for instance, right? And it's like, you kind of have, you have a drink or two or whatever. And it's like, I just needed to separate from work. And so that provides that. But then you find like, oh, this provides, this is kind of an off switch to my work day.
Yep.
And it's really effective.
Sure.
So I can go, 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 and then off switch.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, you need that off switch.
Yep.
There's nothing you can do besides that switch to make it stop. So now that switch is mandatory in life or whatever.
Yeah.
And now we're, you know, we're veering off of rest and all that, but I think...
Well, I think it's the importance of having rest and finding that balance that keeps us from choosing those off switches where we want to find rest instantly.
Right.
I think that's part of what we're talking about is if I'm able to find that margin, build that margin, you know, have a mission, if you will, that allows there to be margin,
right,
then I'm not necessarily looking for those instant offs.
Yeah.
Because I'm not only shutting off work, I'm shutting off other things as well.
Right.
And I think at that point, it's important for us to decipher the two.
Yeah. And, you know, I have a good friend that I, kind of the inverse of this, I described it with him, like limiting the chaos, right? Making decisions to help, you know, life decisions, what job you work at, you know, what things you allow in your household, just whatever, that making decisions to limit the chaos, because sometimes you're not at a point where it's I just have to do more quadrant two activities. Sometimes it's about stopping the geyser, right, that's just bursting, and it's like, what can I do to plug this hole? Okay, let's plug this one. Okay. And like I call it limiting the chaos, because I think sometimes that's where you're at, you know.
Sure.
But you can't get to rest until you're, if you do have that going on, kind of that geyser situation, you can't get to the other side to rest until you start limiting some of that chaos. And so
no doubt,
taking baby steps towards that and towards a future where rest is an option. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think as when you say the geysers, I think about the plate spinner. You know, that we think there's so many plates and we got to keep them spinning. And it's like, sometimes the best thing we can do maybe is let one or two of those plates just kind of not spin anymore.
Yeah.
And recognize, or somebody else can spin those plates.
Yeah.
And it's not that important for me, and it can stop. So, yeah.
Yeah. And in some cases, like, for instance, what job you work at or something like that, or a friendship you have, this particular job or this particular friendship asks you to hold 12 plates. And it's like, there's this other job that might ask you to hold 3, which is a reasonable number.
Sure.
For, you know, on a daily basis. But this particular job that you're, quote unquote, stuck in or whatever, is asking you to spend 12.
Yeah.
That's a way to limit chaos, right? Like, and so that's, yeah, it's interesting. I like the plate analogy too.
Yeah.
But
so, any closing thoughts?
No, I mean, I think you and I are in the same boat in that we're learning the value of rest, but I wouldn't say we're experts at it.
No doubt.
I think you and I both maybe struggle with needing to value it more. What do you think?
And I agree with that. And I think there's a desire on our part to extend an invitation to those that might be listening to be able to say, okay, yeah, we're finding out that rest is valuable and it's okay. So extend yourself that opportunity, that grace, if you will, to be able to say, okay, do I need to find a little more rest in my day? And I think, you know, as we do, I think we find more productivity.
Yeah.
Not that productivity is the goal. You know,
it's
like, I just spun it back.
We even try and sell rest with you. Yeah. Be more productive.
No doubt. But I think for me,
I agree.
That's what it has come back to. It's like, as I do find time for rest, I'm a better me. I guess is a way to avoid the productivity speak.
Yeah.
But I'm a better me.
Yeah.
For those That's around
good.
Me.
That's and, good, because you're right. It's not just about coming out of a good rest session to be, okay, now I can go. It's about thinking better.
Yeah.
And so making better prioritized decisions, which sometimes don't involve productivity.
Yes.
They involve spending a moment with this person.
Yep.
Which we wouldn't consider productive, but it's a rested mind recognizes the importance of those moments. Mm-hmm. That's it. I like how you spun that.
I try.
It is funny how we naturally gravitate towards selling productivity. That's good.
Fair enough. Well, that's how we see it. That's
how we see it. Now go get some coffee and wake up.
Hey, thank you for listening to our podcast. If you like How I See It, please do all the things that podcasts tell you to do. Subscribe, rate, review, follow us, and or talk nicely about us on social media. If you want to reach out, the email is us@howiseeit.click. Yep, I said dot click, as in dot C-L-I-C-K. Please tell your friends about this show, and we'll see you on the next one.